Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, and welcome to Danny in the Valley, your weekly dispatch from deep inside the Silicon Valley future machine. Before we get to today's show, I just wanted to give you a heads up on some of the guests and other cool stuff we have planned over the next few weeks. So next week, I'll be sitting down with Aubrey de Grey, who's a British scientist with the largest beard I've ever seen in person. He's working on longevity. He's backed by people like Peter Thiel and Vitalik Buterin, the founder of Ethereum. And he claims we're ever so close to figuring out how to live for quite literally thousands of years. So that should be fun. Other guests we have coming up include Brian Chesky, founder of Airbnb. We have Andrew Mason, the founder of Groupon, to talk about his new company. We've got a special report on esports, which I've been working on in the background, talking to loads of folks and trying to figure out how to play Hearthstone, which has been highly entertaining and made me feel very old. But I think you'll enjoy that one. Anyhow, that's just a flavor of what is coming, and there's loads more. But now we move on to today's show.
Yo, technology. What is it all about?
If there's something you feel really deeply about, in our case, it's always been art. No matter how strange the idea seems from the outside, there is a way to kind of make it personal, to make it relevant.
My guests this week are Prerna Gupta and Parag Chordia. Hopefully I'm saying those right. They are a husband and wife team behind Hooked, an app that has become a bit of a phenomenon. It's a text-based fiction app, so stories in the form of a text conversation between two people to which you are the voyeur. And that may not sound like your bag, but people, especially young people, love it. They have more than 40 million people on it. It has hit the top of the App Store charts in a number of countries, and they've raised millions from a who's who in the tech and entertainment world, betting that this may just be the future of the novel. Investors include Snoop Dogg, of course, Kevin Durant and Steph Curry from my beloved Golden State Warriors, as well as media investor Peter Chernin and Sweet Capital, the guys from Candy Crush. So despite having raised all that cash, they run a pretty lean operation. They don't have an office, so I met them at their house in Brisbane, which is just south of San Francisco at the top of a very steep hill with some pretty outstanding views over the San Francisco Bay. And we talk about remaking the novel, getting millennials to start reading, and their longer-term plans to make movies based on their most popular stories. And just before we get started, two production notes, which are extremely important. Parag and Prerna have a no-shoes policy in their house, so in yet another Danny in the Valley first, this was my inaugural interview where I was in socks, breaking new ground every day. Thankfully, I had put on a fresh pair of socks, so my little piggies weren't getting an airing. And second, I encourage you to listen all the way to the end this week, which of course you do anyway, because this week there is a special sonic treat waiting for you. Without further ado, here's Prerna and Parag.
That hill is no joke.
I usually forget to warn people, and then they're always like a little shocked.
So. Yeah.
We're live at the headquarters of Hooked. Headquarters/home. Thank you for having me here.
Thanks for coming. Yeah. You made it up the hill.
I did. A very steep hill, but the view over the bay is pretty outstanding.
Makes it worth it.
Yeah. So before we dive into kind of what it is you guys are doing, it'd be great to just maybe start with the broader problem you're trying to solve or the market you're trying to address.
Our goal is to make reading engaging for young people on mobile. And, you know, our belief is that reading is fundamental and that great stories are fundamental to the human experience. But I think a lot of people feel that reading as a medium is dying, especially in younger generations. But we don't believe it. We think that people will always want to read great stories, but that the way in which we tell stories needs to adapt really to reflect the modern mind and to reflect the way in which we live our lives today.
So for those who don't know, obviously, so 2017, you guys won an award from Apple or something like that, or got some recognition?
Yeah, so in 2017, we were recognized by both Apple and Google as one of the best apps of 2017. Google named Hooked one of the most entertaining apps on mobile for 2017, and Apple actually created an entire category called Reinventing Reading. It was pretty cool. You know, it's a testament to the impact that we are starting to have on the space of reading.
How many people are on Hooked?
We have 40 million readers, and almost all of them came last year in 2017.
And what's the geographical breakdown of that, or do you know that?
Yeah, so Hooked readers are all across the world. I mean, so far we've focused mostly on English-speaking countries, so 70-80% English-speaking, and then 20-30% the rest of the world. They're the charts, which basically track at a given moment in time, a given day, which app is the biggest in that particular geography. And so in 25 different countries, Hooked has reached the number one spot.
And is that in entertainment apps or reading apps?
Overall.
Like the number one most downloaded app?
So it's been a wild ride. One of the things that really amazed us was we always thought that Hooked was going to be a universal reading platform, but we wondered the extent to which our initial stories were going to translate across different cultures. And one of the things that we found was that we simply made translations of some of our top stories, and they worked equally well in all these different countries.
So you're number one all over the world, but for those who don't know what is it? How does it work?
Hooked is chat fiction. So the basic idea is that there are stories told in the form of text message conversations between characters. Essentially, they're dialogue-driven stories, and the conceit is there are two people, you know, texting back and forth, and some sort of suspenseful or thrilling or romantic story unfolds through the course of that conversation.
And they're usually pretty short.
They're usually short. Each episode is around 5 minutes. It takes about 5 minutes to read an episode. And we have a series, so some stories will go on for multiple episodes. But the basic idea is it's something you can read on the go. If you're on a bus somewhere, if you're waiting in an office for a doctor's appointment or waiting for a meeting, in those short bursts, when you might usually go and check a social media feed, go to Instagram or Facebook to get your fix, we feel that most people, it's often not a very fulfilling experience. And so maybe instead, why don't you come over to Hooked and read a story, and it's a little bit more nourishing and you might feel better at the end of that 5 minutes.
Right. And it's a paid subscription.
It's freemium. So you can read anything in our app for free. Basically, you can read in 5 minute chunks for free. And so if you're only using it for 5 minutes, you know, you can access anything in the catalog and keep reading the story. Just come back after the paywall. The timer comes up.
How long is the timer?
Usually it's about half an hour.
so you're trying to basically bank on people wanting to binge.
Exactly. And what we find is that depending on the story, you know, anywhere between 5-10% of people are going to be bingers.
They're your power users.
Yeah,
so
they're interested in paying. But for the rest of the, you know, of the reading world, you can still access the stories just at 5 minutes at a time.
Right. And who writes these stories? Like, how do you source them? Because I think it's also interesting to kind of, if you step back and look at the kind of the longer term plan of how you get the stories and then what you're going to do with it over the longer term.
All our stories are written by professional writers. We have a few different ways of finding writers who want to write in this strange new, you know, chat fiction format. One is we have an editorial team based in New York. They have relationships with agents.
Are these people from like the traditional New York literary world?
So some are. So when we first started, you know, we had this idea to tell stories in this format, and we didn't have any connections in the literary world. And, you know, obviously who's going to take something like this seriously from the establishment? So we actually decided to start with young writers. We reached out to MFA programs across the US and, you know, just put out a call and said, you know, paid opportunity in creative writing. We're trying to make reading engaging for young people. If you're interested in the future of reading, submit a story to us. And in the first month after that call, we had 200 stories submitted to us in this chat fiction format. That was really interesting to us. So that was before we even launched the app.
Wow, 200.
So it was interesting to see the demand amongst writers to write stories like this. And they were able to adapt to writing in this format so quickly. That was very encouraging to us because it showed that writers are interested in exploring new formats. They like the idea of writing chat stories. But over time, we've kind of, you know, expanded. So through that, we got our initial pool of writers, and they had writer friends, and they kind of sent them to us, sent them our way. But over time, we've also developed relationships with the traditional establishment. Agents are starting to be interested in giving their writers an opportunity to write for Hooked as well. And obviously, the big difference is when we started, we had zero readers, and now we have 40 million. So it's an opportunity for writers that are looking to reach a new audience or sometimes try a different type of genre. They might be romance writers, but they'll give horror a chance.
Right. Flex that muscle.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you seen the reaction shift? Because I imagine some writers, some established writers would be like, you want me to write in text form so, you know, millennials can read it on their phone? Like, no, thank you.
Yeah, so we still get that reaction quite a lot. There are different types of writers out there and different types of people in general. And for some people, they're perfectly happy doing what they've always done and writing novels normally. And that's fine. I mean, that's great. That's fantastic. We love normal novels and we need those people to keep doing that. But I think that there is a subset of people who believe that fiction needs to adapt to stay relevant. I think a lot of people really enjoy the creative challenge. It's difficult to write great stories in this new format.
In chat form.
In chat form. And I think they enjoy that.
You know, with any new medium, when you're competing against something that's established and that has a tradition of perhaps hundreds or even thousands of years, there's going to be resistance. If you think about what it was to translate a play into a movies were not what we think of them today. They were essentially translating plays. And of course, at that time, you weren't using the power of the medium, the intimacy of the medium, the fact that you didn't have to shout, the fact that you could show visuals that were different than what the characters were doing at that moment and therefore create new atmospheres and moods. So it took a while to develop the language of cinema. And I think similarly with writing, with new mediums, you have to give it time. You have to experiment, you have to play, and then ultimately you have to establish that there is something unique, there's something special in the way that you write for this medium and that it can have an emotional impact. Ultimately, who cares what the form is? What matters is what is the emotional and intellectual impact? I think right now we've shown that there is a huge demand to read on the phone because it's ubiquitous. It's always with us and people are always going to want great stories. Now it's our challenge and our opportunity to show not only that you can kind of scratch an itch, but actually you can give birth to a new medium, something that's interesting, different, and unique.
It'd be great just to go to a little bit of the history, because obviously what you're doing is interesting, and from what I understand, it's very profitable. You're obviously running a very lean operation here. How'd you end up here?
Parag and I are serial entrepreneurs. We're married co-founders. We've been doing startups together for many years. We always gravitate towards opportunities that lie at the intersection of technology and art. We kind of think of ourselves as part technologists, part artist. A lot of times, you know, technology companies tend to pursue the utilitarian opportunities first. And for us, we get more meaning out of bringing art into people's lives. Our last startup was in the music apps space. We built music creation apps that helped non-musicians make music. So for example, we were part of Smule, which is one of the biggest developers of music creation apps. One of their big apps is something called Sing Karaoke, which is the world's largest karaoke app.
Crowdsource karaoke, kind of.
Yeah, it's communal, exactly, like communal karaoke.
Like a bunch of people singing out of tune together sounds like it could be sonically difficult.
That's where the technology comes into play, to make it all work together and sound good.
So it's like a mega auto-tune or
exactly.
something.
Exactly, exactly. So anyways, we did that for a few years.
You started that and then sold it to Smule?
We were basically two peas in a pod. So we had a company that was competitive to Smule, and we made some fun apps using interesting machine learning technologies to make it easier for people who don't consider themselves musicians to make music on their phones that sounds pretty decent. So one of our big apps actually was something called Songify, which turns speech into song. This was relatively early days in the App Store. We ended up launching that app in 2011, and when we launched it, that app became the number one app in the world for a while. So that was kind of our first...
Oh, so this is like old school. You guys, this is no big deal for you.
That was kind of like our first... That was kind of the thing that put us on the map, I think, as app developers and as entrepreneurs. And that was our first little taste of how you can use the mobile device to bring these interesting entertainment experiences to people's day-to-day lives.
It's kind of funny because my background was in music and machine learning, and everybody used to ask me, why on earth would you want to get a computer to do anything with music? Music is like something that humans do. It's our last refuge. It's so personal and emotional. What does this really have to do with computers? And, you know, I'd go blah, 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 speech recognition for music, but it wasn't obvious like why you would want to do that. And for me, it came from a place of just scientific curiosity. How does the mind process sound? And then what was interesting is that with the rise of iPhone, suddenly there was this musical instrument in everyone's hand. And nobody knew at that time what are the ways in which it can be used to bring a musical experience, not necessarily the same one you're going to have if you pick up a guitar and play it. And so a lot of the really esoteric things we were doing in the world of music technology suddenly became relevant.
Because you were a professor, correct?
At that time, I was a professor at Georgia Tech. I'd done my PhD at Stanford at a place called CCRMA, which is an interdisciplinary institute bringing together computer science people, electrical engineering people, composers. It was really fertile ground for thinking about the ways in which art and technology intersect. And my particular passion was basically trying to understand musical sound. Can we break it apart into its components? What is really happening when somebody is singing? What's happening when they're composing a song? And that was actually what led, that experimentation was what led to our first product. So before Songify, we did something called La-Di-Da, which is something where you sing, it listens to what you're singing, and then it automatically composes music to match.
Okay. And this is like an app for the people. Like
yes. Anybody. Then we were like, well, singing is still something that you have to have a certain amount of confidence to do. What's something that everyone does? Well, everyone talks, and that's what ultimately led to Songify. How can you use speech to then give people a musical experience? But the point is that we took something that was very esoteric, very academic, and just with this rise of this platform, it kind of made it something that went from nothing to suddenly you can reach hundreds of millions of people with this piece of technology. So the scale and the imagination, the combination is just like very intoxicating. If there's something you feel really deeply about, in our case, it's always been art. No matter how strange the idea seems from the outside, there is a way to kind of make it personal, to make it relevant. That's what we learned through this whole process, because when we were doing music creation apps, we consistently got the response, why would you want to do that? Nobody wants to like make music on their phone. They have other ways of making music. And I think what was ultimately so satisfying to us was that our goal was not to replace traditional music making. It was to expand the concept of what musical experiences are and to make it so that more people in their daily lives could have a musical experience. And I think that's something very similar to what we're trying to do with storytelling. There is room, and in fact, there's a need for storytelling to kind of permeate more of our daily life. It shouldn't just be something that a small number of elite educated people do right before bed. Why can't it be something, now that we have this technology that we can bring all around with us everywhere, it shares the different moments of our life?
Are you guys, or either of you, app developers as in coders, or do you have to kind of, you have the idea and then marshal people to actually, because that's what I think a lot of people, everybody I know, especially around here, has an app idea but nobody knows actually how to do it, or they, you know, it's going to cost a lot of money, or it just seems so unattainable. So how do you bridge that gap?
So we're not really actually coders. I mean, we both know how to write code and have written code. In the company, I'm the CEO, Parag's the CTO. He has a PhD in computer science and machine learning, but he's not an app developer. We have always had to find app developers, you know, to programmers to work with us. And, you know, we've had to convince them that these are ideas worth pursuing.
To put it bluntly, no. You do not want me writing the code that reaches millions of people. That was never my forte. But right. I think we brought together people around like a common passion for bringing art into people's lives. And what our unique strength is thinking about how can you take some kind of new technology or something that maybe isn't even fully worked out and think about a way it can become interesting for everybody. Translating technological ideas into compelling consumer experiences, that's our bread and butter. There is something clearly compelling about how the space that mobile devices occupy in our life, there's an intimacy, there's a familiarity. How can we...
And increasingly, it's unhealthy. And there's a real backlash that started last year, and it's really picking up steam, it feels like. You know, it's almost sort of just coming to be seen almost as toxic.
It's literally like the ring. It's like my precious.
Yeah, and so this is something that's really very important to us. And we felt this when we first started the company. It was before this backlash had begun. We really felt that there was a saturation in social media usage and that the behavior was unhealthy. And even if people didn't recognize it, it was making them unhappy. I think social media is like sugar. We're not really evolved to live in an environment with infinite sugar. Just exactly parallel, we're not really evolved to live in an environment with infinite social information. And it kind of hacks our brain and we just keep going towards it to get those hits. But it's not an optimal place for most of us. And somebody has to offer something different. And I think it's not, I hope that more people will just learn the discipline of not checking social media constantly. But I think the majority of people, it's too difficult. And we need to start developing experiences on mobile that are just more nourishing. They have to be as engaging. You have to be able to capture someone's attention and give them an incentive to spend their time doing something like reading fiction as opposed to checking their social feed. It's kind of up to us as app developers and as entrepreneurs to figure out how do we create more nourishing experiences on mobile. And we really feel that fiction has an important role to play in that.
Going back to the history, you have Songify. Do you sell it to Smule?
So we had done La-Di-Da at that point, yeah, which is the automatic accompaniment app, and we did Songify, and Songify kind of rose up the charts and put us on the map. And then our frenemy Smule kind of dropped us a note, and we really were friends. Smule's co-founder was Gu Wong, who was a professor at Stanford, where a few years ago Prague had done his PhD. So it's okay. A very small right. community. And so we all knew each other and had a lot of respect for each other. And Gu and Smule CEO Jeff just called us up and we started talking and felt like we would be stronger together. So we merged and Prague and I joined Smule as executives. I became chief product officer at Smule and Prague was chief scientist there. And we started to have quite a bit of impact. I mean, Smule now has reached over 350 million people around the world with their wow. music apps. So it's amazing. That was an amazing experience for us. But after a few years there, we started to feel like we were ready for the next adventure. And so we decided to leave Smule. And before getting kind of jumping into the next startup, we didn't know exactly what we wanted to do. We didn't even know if we were going to do another startup. We just wanted to get back in a creative mindset. So we actually left Silicon Valley. We went and traveled. We ended up traveling for a year and a half. We went all over the world.
A year and a half.
Yeah.
So you've sold a startup or you've merged. You have created a successful startup. So are you doing like hostel style travel? Or are you doing like the 5-star?
No, definitely not 5-star. Kind of, I would say somewhere in between. Yeah, somewhere in between. We ended up using Airbnb a lot. Sometimes you can find like monthly rentals at a decent price, and we kind of gave away most of our possessions and then packed up the little bit that we had left in a storage unit. So we weren't paying rent anywhere. I mean, it was just the two of us, and a lot of times we would just find these one bedroom villas a couple of blocks from the beach or something, somewhere in an amazing remote location. Yeah, so we just ended up traveling for a year and a half, and while we were traveling, we started writing a novel.
You were writing that together?
We say we were writing that together. Pretty much what that means is that I was writing and Prague was surfing most of the time. But,
gotcha.
Which is how most of our collaboration goes.
That's why you're the CEO, yeah. Right?
But no, it was actually, for me, it was great to just have, I mean, the ideas were created together. to be able to create the world and the characters and talk about them as real people
together.
What kind
of novel was it?
It's, well, we're still working on it. It's a sci-fi fantasy trilogy for young adults set in Silicon Valley in the future.
So you're still working on that?
Still working on it. Yeah, and I think eventually we'll launch it as a story in Hooked now.
Right.
That's the idea. But what was interesting was, you know, we would travel and talk to people and they say, what are you doing? And we say, we're writing a novel. And most people would be kind of like, why? You know, what's the point? No one's going to read a novel. Nobody reads. Reading is dying. We just kept getting that again and again. And that's where we really started to think about how are we going to reach people with this? How, if reading is dying, how are we going to get young adults to actually care about what we're doing? Really, it started from that. And the first touch point for almost any piece of media now today for most young people is on the phone. And so if we wanted to actually get people to read what we were writing, it felt like it made sense to figure out how to capture their attention on the phone. And we started just looking at, how do people read on the phone? How engaged are they when they're reading novels on the phone? And we just got deeper and deeper into that research and realized that they were not very engaged at all when they're reading normal novels on the phone. And so we started to ask ourselves, well, can we change that? Can we somehow think about the novel as a product and think about it in terms of a user interface like we do with our apps?
So the problem with the novel is the user interface.
Yeah.
Right.
It sounds, you know...
It sounds very Silicon Valley, but
yeah, and I apologize for that, but it's you know, that's where it came from.
Yeah.
It was just thinking about the mindset that people are in when they're staring at their screen and the fact that it is a tiny screen and that novels are often 100,000 words long and not really designed to be read in a few short sessions. And that you're also competing constantly with attention from Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram. So kept going down that path and ultimately started experimenting with new formats for storytelling that could compete and that were just easier to grasp while reading on a small screen. And ultimately tested a lot of different things and eventually kind of randomly tried this idea of testing a short horror story in the format of a chat conversation. And the first one that we tested, just everything changed, basically. Suddenly, the readers that we were testing on stopped and they paid attention and they
read.
Where'd
you find the readers? Where'd you find this beta group?
We found them on Facebook.
Fan groups or something?
We basically ran ads. So we ran ads that advertised, read the book that could be the next Hunger Games, you know. It was a selection of people who were ostensibly interested in reading something like The Hunger Games. But even then, when we tested any story in a normal novel format, the completion rates were so low. We might get people start, you know, they'd start reading, but they would just drop off after a few seconds.
So it'd be a really interesting cat video that had just popped up or something.
Exactly. They lost attention. Yeah. But when we told a pithy, high-intensity story in the form of a text message conversation, it kept their attention for 5 minutes.
Is it a similar, like a text conversation where you have to, like, you know, tap something and then there's the three little dots and then something else comes? Is that sense of suspense?
Yes, that's exactly right. Suspense is the key to all of these stories, really. And it's about, you have this very limited window that shows you a piece of what's happening. And that window is the messages that you're receiving from this other person. And so you have to understand, where are they? Why are they in danger? You know, are they telling the truth? Basically, the way most of these stories unfold is it's a conversation between two different people. And so you are the observer.
And so did you actually start developing that while you were out on a beach somewhere hanging out? Or did you actually decide, okay, enough of the good life, we have to come back and... work.
We decided to come back. Yeah, we decided to come back, but this is what brought us back, and we felt like there was something in it.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts?
Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
You have some interesting investors.
We do, yes. It's been a pleasant surprise, actually, the number of people that have been interested and receptive, you know, to investing in this, both from Silicon Valley and Hollywood. On the Hollywood side, we have some famous actors like Ashton Kutcher and Jamie Foxx. We have some producers like Greg Silverman, who was formerly the president of Warner Brothers, Peter Chernin, who's a big-time producer, Charles King, who is an amazing producer. Some pretty cool athletes such as Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Andre Iguodala.
Oh, really? Others.
Yes. Oh, I have to also mention Snoop, which is...
Snoop?
Yeah. Which is Snoop and Mariah Carey, which has been so cool to get musicians as well into what we're doing.
Please explain how that happened.
It's one of these things that, you know, when we first started, we really thought it's going to be impossible to raise funding for this. It's... First of all, you're going to have the normal skepticism, which is nobody wants to read. Then on top of that, in Silicon Valley especially, there's oftentimes a hesitation to invest in content-oriented startups, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, on top of that, the question is, how are you going to monetize? No one's going to read, and certainly no one's going to pay for it. But it was interesting that from the very beginning, although there was a lot of skepticism, I think this idea that storytelling is fundamental to us as humans, I think, really resonated with everybody that we talked to. It seemed like an inevitability that this form of self-expression, which is the novel, which has been such a huge part of human culture for so long, will have to adapt. It will have to change and evolve. It just seemed obvious, I think, ultimately, when we started talking about it to investors around here. And so when we first started, we actually mostly raised funding from our previous investors. But once we had the product, once we went through all of that research and had the product and people sat down and read with it, they themselves were hooked and everything changed at that point in time. And so we started to get traction amongst investors in Silicon Valley. You know, there's increasingly, I think, a connection between Silicon Valley and Hollywood. And so they would talk to some of the folks who invest out of Hollywood. And they would say, hey, what's investment
new, what's
that you're into?
Yeah.
And they would show them Hooked. And it kind of, in a sense, sort of grew through word of mouth, I think, just amongst the investor community as well.
Right. So did Snoop take the meeting? And was he stoned?
I'll write a story about it on Hooked. You can interpret.
That's a polite pass. Okay, I understand. So how much have you guys raised, or is that public?
Yeah, we can talk about it. We raised $15 million in total. We raised about $5 million in our seed funding and then $10 million in our Series A, which we did last year. But this past year was actually a pretty incredible year for us in terms of growth and all of that. So we were actually profitable, just a little bit. But, you know, we had some profit last year, which was awesome. So
that's very un-Silicon Valley.
Yeah, it's un-Silicon Valley. It's also not normal, I think, for media startups either. It's hard, you know, but it's been great to be able to not just reach people, but also show that people are willing to pay, and it allows us to pay our writers, which is great. And I think it's an important part of the whole circle, you know.
So how many writers do you have and how many stories are there and all that?
So we've worked with a few hundred writers, and they have written...
I would say there's about 10,000 episodes in the app right now.
Oh, wow.
So, and each episode is about a 5-minute read or 1,000 words.
Right. 5 years from now, what does Hooked look like as a company?
Our belief is that great stories are great across mediums. And really the reason that we're doing this is we think that stories play an important role in people's lives and in culture. Stories are the way in which we live in other people's shoes or learn through other people's experiences. They allow us to empathize and to live in different worlds and understand, you know, the experience of different realities. And so we think that the best stories start as novels in written format. But our vision long-term, you know, we want to create great stories, even better stories than what we have currently, and have hopefully hundreds of millions of people read these stories. But ultimately, once they're out in the hands of hundreds of millions of people, we want to start thinking about adapting those stories into richer formats for mobile, basically. And time will tell what that looks like exactly. I think it's going to be some version of video, obviously, whether it's an adaptation of what TV looks like today or something along those lines for mobile. But we also think that they're interesting avenues of exploration in things like AR, for example. It's kind of a trendy word these days in Silicon Valley, and so I hesitate to throw that out there. But I do think that as AR technology improves, that it will allow us to make stories richer and deeper. Our goal is to be a modern Netflix, basically. We want to be a storytelling platform where hundreds of millions of people around the world come and find great stories in a format that speaks to them.
And the stories that people are writing for you, presumably you attain the rights to those stories.
So we have shared rights.
In other words, so you're kind of becoming like almost like a film studio type.
Yeah, it's kind of a next gen studio, I think is an interesting way of thinking about it. You know, the idea is we develop stories very quickly, you know, with relatively low cost because they're written in this very minimalist format, and we're able to find audiences for them profitably, and in many cases, very large audiences for them. And so at that point, that story is pretty validated. Then when you turn around and, you know, have to invest tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars into producing that, let's say, into a film, it's a pretty decent investment to make because you know that that story has an audience and that it's resonating.
So how long before like the first like Hooked Studios production?
I'm not sure. I can't say. It's hard to predict the way that things go in startup land. But and you know, of course, like for the first few, we'll partner. I mean, we'll do it. We'll partner with some of our investors.
I was gonna say, if you have like people like churning behind you, I mean,
yeah. It would be done as in a collaboration, but hopefully in a couple of years that we'll be there and we can start producing some of our stories into other forms of media.
You know, like, it's kind of insane that we have this device that's now in like over 2 billion people's hands.
And I think it's like 3 billion.
Yeah,
I mean, it's whatever.
Billion,
yeah,
whatever.
It's many.
Like some astounding.
Yeah.
It's approaching like 40, 50% of the entire world has a device where they have a smartphone. But we still have not. We don't still have a story that was mobile first, that was like designed for mobile and that reached a massive audience. And to me, it's just that simple. Our goal at Hooked is to show that the next Harry Potter type story, the next story that reaches mass cultural impact, can be on mobile and in fact will be mobile first. And I think, you know, it's obviously we're not the only ones thinking about mobile storytelling. There's even just in that space a rich history, a lot of innovation, but we still haven't cracked it, and that's ultimately our goal.
And I don't know if you have this information, but what is the age breakdown of who's reading?
Hooked readers are pretty broad, so we are basically reaching people between the ages of approximately 13 to 30. It's approximately 60% female, 40% male, but really what we've seen is that, not surprisingly, we actually, more than advertising for Hooked, we advertise for specific stories. And certain stories obviously appeal to certain types of people. So it's almost like we let the stories find their audience. As we've been kind of expanding the types of stories we tell, our demographics have been expanding. Initially, we skewed somewhat younger, more like 13 to 24. Now we're starting to tell some stories that are longer and more complex. We're reaching an older demographic. One of the interesting things was initially we skewed heavily female. It was like 80-20, 70-30 female. Now it's 60-40, and we're seeing that even come close to parity now. So, which was our hypothesis, that as you expand the types of stories that you tell, you expand the genres that you're telling them in, you're reaching more people.
Especially initially, you talked about the 80-20 split, female to male. I imagine that must have helped you with investors, because I was, a few months ago, interviewed Jeremy Liu, who's the investor in Snapchat, and he said that was the thing that kind of got him really interested. It was like, it was really popular amongst teenage girls, because where teenage girls, teenage boys follow, then everybody else follows.
Yeah, so I completely agree with Jeremy's point on that, and we feel that the same is true. So what's interesting is that was true for Snapchat, so it's true for social media apps, but it's, if you look at it, it's increasingly also true for pop culture. So a lot of times the songs that teen girls are really into become the hit songs, and the books and the movies that teen girls are into end up being the big blockbusters. And so we very early on felt like young adult novels were the place for us to focus. It's just also, we actually love young adult novels. I personally love reading young adult novels.
Is there like a Sweet Valley High collection over here?
Like, I think Hunger Games was super fun to read. You know, there's something about stories that are written for that age group. I just think that they tend to be more powerful emotionally, because it's okay to be overly emotional at that age. But ultimately, when it's something breaks out outside of the young adult demographic, everyone starts to pay attention, and we can all be 13 years old again for a while. And I think everyone appreciates that. And those tend to be the most universal stories and often the most powerful ones. And it worked. I mean, we didn't do it on purpose. We weren't, you know, targeting that demographic, but it's just kind of happened naturally that it resonated with them. And ultimately, as it started resonating and as it started growing in that demographic, it expanded.
Awesome. Well, you guys have been very generous with your time. And I have one request before I leave. I actually found you guys through an investor, the guys at Sweet Capital. And they mentioned that you, Parag, are amazing on this Indian kind of like guitar type situation, but it's not. What is it?
It's called a sarod. It's a fretless plucked instrument from North India.
That. I'd love to just get a little, like, if you could just play a little something, that'd be awesome.
Pleasure.
If you could play us out, that would be great.
Yeah,
awesome.
Pleasure.
And that is it for another edition of Danny in the Valley. I will make my goodbye brief so you can enjoy the music in the background. But thank you very much for listening. If you want to read more about Hooked, I've written a story in this weekend's paper about it, so you can check that out. You can also find me online at thetimes.co.uk, on Twitter at Danny Fortson, and please stop into Apple, the App Store, and leave a review. It really does help. I now leave you in the very capable hands of Parag. See you next week.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.